Hey, funny business listeners, before you guys jump into another red hot episode from the boys, I just wanted to jump on quickly. It's Caleb Holstein, co-founder of SquareX Innovations here. As Aussies, we love our coffee, and the Australian coffee scene has long been a global benchmark for quality and innovation. And now I'm pumped to introduce you to our best invention since the flat white, SquareX's first product deployment, GreenSquare. GreenSquare is a holistic ag tech software suite enabling coffee roasters and importers to take control of their largest product cost, green coffee. At SquareX, we're securing the digital future of the coffee supply chain and beyond. Enjoy the app.
Hello and welcome to Funny Business, a little bit of funny and a little bit of business. I'm Locke.
And I'm Rob, and on today's episode, we have Steve Grace from the Nudge Group. And I reckon this was probably the most fun and energetic episode we've had in a while.
You know? You sound very energetic.
No, yeah. Steve brought the heat. He brought the heat.
Is your brain melting? Is it?
No, I'm just trying to be articulate, and I did a bad job.
And the funny part was when you're saving this episode, because you're Mr. Producer, you had Steve Nudge as the folder, didn't you? Thought his last name was Nudge.
I never thought his last name was Nudge. But you know when you're hearing different words come through and you try and piece the name together and you're typing stuff out and you get it wrong?
Yeah. That happens all the time.
It's annoying. That's the issues about being and doing stuff in media, which Steve Price. Grace! From the project.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna cut that. Don't put that in.
No, I reckon leave it. Warts and all, but unreal chat. I feel like you're gonna love it. See you on the other side.
Steve, thank you so much for jumping on the Funny Business Podcast. For those at home listening, tell us who are you and what do you do?
Well, firstly, thanks for having me. All the other ones I've done are all very serious. So I feel like this is gonna be my jam. This is where I need to be. What do I do? So I run a business called the Nudge Group. Nudge Group has lots of different elements, but we have offices here, London, Singapore, and the main function of the Nudge Group up until now has been recruiting purely for startups and scale-ups, pretty much pre-seed to Series B, helping them launch into new countries, finding staff across all their different aspects. And we've built the whole business only for startups. It's very different to other recruitment companies that are out there, and we use a lot of media in that. But now we're also morphing into a media business called TNG Media, very original name. You might work out that stands for the Nudge Group Media. And we've got a few assets in there. We've got a company called Balance the Grind, which is super cool, which I think you guys know. We've got the Give It a Nudge podcast, which is a video podcast. And we've got a new one, which we've just made up, and it's gone really well. I love it when things like that happen, called Startup Life Unscripted. So that's kind of where I'm at today.
I saw that one popping up. Feels like everyone, obviously, background of understanding and finding out who you were and what you do through Balance the Grind originally a few years back. And a big fan of the whole concept of the importance of media, and love to get your, how did you end up in this space in the first place?
It, like everything in my life, just pure ridiculous chance and boredom. Let's try that kind of attitude. So media started with Give It a Nudge Show, right? So when we were hiring, COVID came along, and that wasn't great. But what we found was that it was one of the hardest hiring markets ever. And how do you persuade someone who's in a perfectly good job to leave their job and go and work for a company they've never heard of, for a founder they've never heard of, which has got a massive chance of failure? It's not a great sales pitch. So we were like, how are we going to do this? No one's interested in talking to us. So we thought, we'll get the founders and we'll film them. We'll interview them and we'll film them, and then we'll use that media content. We'll send that to candidates saying, hey, watch this. Do you want to work for this company? Look, watch it. And it worked so well. And it's evolved a lot, but it was literally just, we were sitting there in COVID going, we had no work. We didn't really know what to do. Let's just start filming people. And we did that in a manky old warehouse in Ascot, which had no aircon, with a few curtains that made it look fancy. And it was born, and I just loved media from then on in. I'd never done anything in media. It's super cool though.
What did you want to be when you were growing up?
I wanted to be a professional tennis player.
I like that.
We had that on the list to talk about at the end, but let's get straight into it.
Who's your favorite player? What styles do you like? You know,
how's the, are you forehand, are you backhand dominant? Tell us about you, the player.
I'm awful. So. I got in to do marine biology at uni. I chose marine biology purely based on there were two really hot girls I knew that were going to do marine biology at this university. And that was my plan. Again, very, very structured, very strategic. And then I got offered a chance to go and play tennis for this company called the Stonebridge Academy, which promised to make you, you know, the best tennis player that you could be. Unfortunately, what I didn't realize is that wasn't a particularly good tennis player, the best tennis player I could be. But I decided not to go to uni. My parents were thrilled. And, you know, private school fees, and now he's going to come play tennis. And I went and played tennis for a year and went all over the world and had honestly the best year of my life. And it probably changed me more than anything. I was insanely shy before that, and it really changed my personality. But I was terrible. If you had to pick a shot, it would be the backhand. But you can't, you know, I was a two-handed backhander. That was about the – I can still hit that shot. The others have just gotten worse as I've gotten older. I don't play anymore. But, yeah, that's – that was what I wanted to be, and that was I was never going to be that.
And when did you put the racket down and move into the business world?
So after a year of failure and not winning a single thing, I thought, I'm going to try coaching. Didn't like coaching. Very frustrating coaching. I don't know if you ever coached anyone, but particularly in tennis where you see them once a week, you get them to change something, and they go, yeah, and they practice it, and then they go and they play all week the same way they used to play, and they come back and they haven't improved, and you do it again and again and again, and you go, I am literally going to shoot myself. This is the worst job in the world. So I stopped doing that, and I fell into the wonderful business world. I became a waiter because I didn't know what to do. And then by pure chance, because I went to a very well-respected school, let's say, I got a job in finance. Now, I'm horrendously dyslexic, and that includes numbers. That didn't go great either. I did that for about 18 months, and then I walked into a recruitment agency and said, is there anything else I can do? And they said, you could work here. And I was like, that sounds all right. That sounds easy. And that was how I fell into recruitment. So, yeah, like I said, I'm a very strategic individual.
What is it about doing new things that gets it going? Is it something that like a new challenge for you where you're like, what else can I do? What else could I be?
I think for me, this sounds so wanky. I like to do things that I don't know how to do. I've always have. So for example, I've just completed my first half Ironman. I've never run a triathlon before in my life. I hadn't ridden a bike for 20 years. I hadn't really run more than about 3Ks, and I definitely hadn't swum more than about 10 lengths of a pool. But it seemed like a great idea. And let's not do the sprints. Let's not do the Olympics. Just go in with a half Ironman. And I just did that. And I have to say, I love that. And in about, I think next week, I'm walking across some hot coals in Botanic Gardens because it's some sort of CEO challenge. I just like doing stuff. And I'm trying to wing foil at the moment. I don't know if anyone's ever looked that up. Look it up. It's the most ridiculously, insanely hard sport I've ever tried in my life. I think it's just maybe it's a low boredom threshold. Maybe there's some ADHD in there as well as the dyslexia. Who knows? I'm easily bored.
I've seen a bunch of people out at we live down here in Torquay on the surf coast down in Victoria, and right, there's a bunch of people out in the foils, but haven't seen as many people out on the wind foils too. I can imagine they're already hard enough to control when they're up and going on that thing, let alone add the wind element to that.
Not the foils are easy. Dead set. If you try it, half an hour, anyone can be up and foiling. They genuinely can. It's really the powered ones. They're really heavy. They're really stable. They've got a battery that weighs like enormous amounts of weight. So they're actually, it's just a matter of learning to keep your weight on the front rather than the back. That doesn't take long at all. Wing foiling, however, is ridiculous. There's no battery in the board, so it's as sketchy as hell. And you're holding this thing that the wind's like a sail. It's just really hard. And you've got to move your feet whilst you're up on this thing that's going like this. It's nuts. And needless to say, it's gotten a little bit better than tennis, but I don't know if I'm going to be a wing foiler either.
Hey, how far was the half Ironman? Is that what, like a 50K bike? And or what
is it bigger than that? So I did it in 6 hours, 18 minutes, which is a long time to do exercise. So it was a 2K swim. It was a 90K bike. And then it was a half marathon.
See, that's
ridiculous.
Sounds horrible. It sounds like a horrible experience.
What was your best leg?
I drank a beer super quick at the end, like super quick. But I think I was faster on the bike than I thought. I wasn't good at any of them, but I wasn't bad at any of them. So I didn't really have a favorite. I just wanted to get to the end. They tell you that the first 200 meters of the swim is the worst moment of your life. So I'm like, that's rubbish. So I dive in. It's warmer than I think, and it's a lake, so that's weird. So I'm thinking, why is this lake warm? Because it's not warm temperature. So anyway, I'm moving on from that. There's people kicking you in the head, scratching your back. That's pleasant. And about 3 minutes in, you're like, how the hell am I going to do this for 6 hours? I'm not going to make it. I'm going to drown. And you go through this whole, and you're not allowed any headphones in this event because they just want you to be in your own head for 6.5 hours. I don't know if you ever tried to talk to yourself for 6.5 hours. It's not a lot of fun. And
I don't think that'd be healthy for me or Locke. Yeah, I don't think we could do 6 hours by ourselves.
But it's I love, actually the event I love. The training is brutal. The 6 months of training with a coach was brutal, but the event was actually a lot of fun. There was a lot of parts that hurt like hell, but at the end of it, it's awesome. It's an awesome feeling.
Do you plan on doing more of this sort of stuff?
So I would, but I've been quite clearly told by my wife that if I choose to go down the Ironman route, which involves, you know, 20 odd hours of training a week, then I am choosing that ahead of her, which may mean that she would leave. So I think that might be the last one we're doing.
I like that's a good safe
pick and choose, don't you?
Yeah, that's a good safe option of what to say during when you hit record. Tell us the truth afterwards, yeah? Hey, let's go backwards a bit and let's talk about the world of startups. I feel like you mentioned before, like starting the business around specifically designed for startups. What are your thoughts on this space? What do you like about it? How do you think it's evolved since you've got in it?
So I'd had two recruitment companies before. I'd sold both of them. One was corporate, one was government. And I was adamant I wasn't going to do another recruitment business. And after 6 months of coming up with just stupid ideas, I was going to do a whole bunch of stuff with Chinese people, all sorts of different ideas, none of which would work because COVID kicked in pretty much straight after I started Nudge. I thought, look, I love startups. No one does startup recruitment well. My companies hadn't. I thought we need to build one. And so I went and interviewed a whole bunch of founders. And what I love about startup is everyone's so positive. Everyone believes it's going to work. Everyone is very, I think it's the collaboration almost. You know, these guys are and girls are probably the time poorest people in the world, and yet they will give you more time than nearly anyone else. And they all genuinely want to see everyone else succeed. Apart from the odd egotistical maniac, of which I have met a few, it's just a really positive place. I'm a very optimistic person, so I like to be around positivity. And it's just so much fun. It's been the best company I've built by a country mile.
And what about like launching and having tentacles across like outside of Australia and across the globe? What's the difference you're seeing between what's going on here and elsewhere?
Yeah, I'm glad I did that. And there's a story behind why we do that, which we won't go into because it'll take too long. But opening London and Singapore and working in places like Dubai and Canada and the US was not the plan initially. But I'm so glad I did that because, like you said, there's a huge difference like in the way people hire, in the ecosystems, in the way funding's done, in the way the employment market goes up and down. Like you look at places like Australia and Singapore, right? Tiny populations. The funding that comes out of the VCs, if it dries up like it has done in the last 12 months compared to where it was sort of 2 years ago, the employment market goes up and down like that. You go from having one person applying to a job advert to having 600 in like a few months. But then you go to the US or you go to the UK and it's totally different. That doesn't happen because the population evens it out more. And then now you look at the whole coming back to work, right? People coming back in the office. Australia's pushing hard for 3 to 4 days. UK is doing the same. The US is doing the opposite. They're pushing more for everyone to stay away because they've now realized rather than just being able to employ the people in Dallas because you're in Dallas, you can employ people across the whole country and they get better quality people. So they're going the other way. See, and the same with Asia. You see all these different, approaches to building companies. Vietnam, we've just started working with. That's a fascinating place. And we're sort of chipping into India, which is terrifying. But it's really, really interesting. Everyone's trying to do the same thing and there's the same drive, but they're all trying to do it in a different way. And I think it's nice to be able to share those learnings with other founders in other countries.
Do you like getting out and about? You mentioned it like at the start, doing the tennis thing and getting to travel around and going different places and now getting to work in different countries and different cultures and different people.
I love it. And my kids are teenagers now, so they have zero interest in me, which has given me so much more time. Once you get over the heartbreak of that. And now, so I can travel now more. And it's just, I think that I'm one of those people, I love flying. I love aeroplane food. I love airports. I know a lot of people don't. They dread that. I could literally have a holiday where I just flew around and never left an airport. I'd have the best time. But I do like going and meeting people. I'm very much a, you might be able to tell, I'm a talker. I like to talk. and to talk. I like to talk to people in life, because in recruitment, that's changed massively as well. We don't do any face-to-face interviews anymore. It doesn't happen. Like before COVID, we'd hardly do any video interviews. Now it'd be really rare to ever do a face-to-face. So going out and seeing the founders, the ecosystems, giving, I love giving talks. I love going to the co-working spaces. I love all that kind of, I love all of that energy that comes out of that.
What's been sort of the hardest thing for you to learn throughout your career, like something that you've had to sort of learn throughout or just sort of get good at? Like you mentioned, like public speaking and becoming a talker, you're a bit introverted. Are there any other things that you've had to develop and now that's like considered a strength?
Discipline. So I wrote an article on this morning for Balance the Grind. You'll see it in next week's newsletter if you subscribe. But I learned, and that was part of the reason I did the Ironman. It wasn't to do the Ironman, it was the discipline of the training. I learned that I had very little discipline. I like to live my life very freely. I like to always, you know, if you'd asked me when I was younger, what did I want to achieve? All I wanted to achieve was to be able to have enough money to do whatever I wanted all the time, whether that was working, not working, buy this, not buy that. You know, that was it. It was never be a billionaire, have a house. It was just be able to do whatever the hell I wanted to do. So what I learned was that I always saw discipline as losing something, you know, sacrificing something. And what I've learned is it's quite the opposite. Discipline gets you everything that you want. And as soon as you reframe it in your mind, and as everyone's taught at school, like, you know, and through all these institutions, that it's a bad thing or it's a negative thing. It's not, it's completely the opposite. I think that's the biggest thing I've learned that's helped me be happier, because I don't feel sad anymore when I'm doing things that perhaps I'm not wanting to do, because I'm not thinking about them as something I'm wanting to do. I'm just literally seeing them as a roadmap to where I want to get. And it's just a different way of looking at it.
Did you have to change up how you worked or how you structured your life or how you did things?
I still need to do a lot of that. I'm unfortunately, I'm very aware of all my shortcomings. I'm just not necessarily willing to change all of them, so that's a problem. But I find everything hard, but I kind of like that too. I think if you find things easy, you know, you see it at school, right? When you see the super talented kid who can't be asked, which is really annoying when you're not the super talented kid. But you can also understand that when you do have things that you're good at, if they came super easy, then you kind of don't appreciate them. Whereas if you had to work to get good at something, like the speaking, for example, and I'm still terrified public speaking. So I have to have, this is a bizarre thing, I have to have a 45-minute walk before I speak. So last year I was at South Star, which is a festival down in Adelaide for startups, and we were staying right next to the venue and I had to give a talk. So I got it in an Uber and I said, you need to drive me 45 minutes walk from here and I'm just going to get out and walk back. So that's one of the things. So I still really struggle. I'm fine once I get going, but I feel so sick and nervous and awful and I don't want to do it. And I'm like, why am I here? You know, I was tempted to just keep going to the airport. But so there's a lot of things like that. But then when you do them, the sense of achievement is so much greater.
That's like you and people always give you the MC jobs. And
oh, I find it hard because they think I'm like, I am social, I get energy from others, but shit like that, public speaking and a big audience, that actually is not my jam. I feel like I go straight into my shell, you know, and it's like, but they're things I need to be better at. But it's like, I always try to find like different techniques on how to just, you know, I do this shit all the time. How do you just go out there and do something where it's just easy for you normally? It's like people playing with crowds and stuff.
You get stooge and people do ask you to do the presenting and do the stuff.
And I'm more than happy to just give things a crack, you know, and if they want me to do it, fuck it, I'll try. But I think that's sometimes how you get in. You're a bit naive getting into things and all of a sudden it just unlocks this fear of like, well, I don't need to be scared of anything. Like I just sort of blindly say yes, but it feels like unlocking that fear, you know, like it's not that bad. It's never really that bad.
I'll tell you how I go across walking across hot coals, which I'm terrified of. That could be really bad. But I think you're right. It never is. And that's why I think it feels good after, because it's never what you think it is. It's always a lot easier. But you see, your problem is you've got this sort of comedy thing behind you, right? Because of the name of your, so everyone wants you to be funny. I mean, no pressure at all there. I mean, that's a nightmare.
We didn't realize that when we called the pod that. It's like, fuck, now people got to expect
a little bit of funny, a little bit of business. Yeah.
You know, but it's like when you meet comedians and stuff at a party and that, they must feel the same thing where it's like, I'm on stage, everyone thinks I'm funny. I don't really feel like
tell
that.
A joke,
like,
huh?
Yeah. It's
tell
like,
a
joke. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I know a couple of high profile comedians and they do. They say the pressure to be funny is insane. So they'd just rather stay at home and hang out with the people they know and not be funny, but then they're funnier. I think you're right. It's a weird thing being funny. And you know, a lot of people don't like the same thing, right? So some people might laugh, some don't. But when you're public speaking, do you feel the need to try and be funny? Do you crack jokes?
No, not really. I just want to make sure I get the right fucking info out and say the right things, because I'm just like, I'm pretty forgetful. So I'm going through over in my head and like, make sure I remember that.
We actually were having this conversation about discipline this morning.
Yeah.
And it was around Locke losing attention for things.
Yeah.
It was like, is that just because, and I was like, probably the answer is that you're not that disciplined. You know, you don't hold yourself to account. You're happy to drift off.
Yeah. And justify it. You know, you can always make sense of anything and go, hey, I can justify why I've done that, you know?
Well, you get the easiest justification for being undisciplined is saying, I've been disciplined all week. So fuck it, I'm going for it now. I'm just going to do something really stupid and undo all the good work. Absolutely. Bring it on.
I love that. What about for you? Are you someone who works a lot on your strengths or weaknesses?
I'm a believer you should work on your strengths.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I know there's sort of two camps, three camps. I'm sure there's probably, God knows, everyone's identifying in a different camp these days. Who knows how many camps there are? But I do believe that you can't be good at everything. So what's the point in trying? This is why I gave up tennis, thank the Lord. I think you just got to go, you know what? I'm good at that. Why don't I get really good at that? In fact, I'm going to get great at that. In fact, maybe I'm going to get the best at that. And I'm not going to worry about that because someone else can do that. Because you're never doing anything in life on your own, really. I mean, there's a couple of things you do on your own, which we won't talk about, but mostly, you know, whether it be build a family, build a business, you know, sport, you're nearly always doing something in some form of team. So you just have to find people that are really good at the stuff you're not. So don't have to worry about that. I think you don't want to be focusing on just being average at everything. That's my belief, I think. I know not everyone agrees with that.
I feel like sports is such a really cool analogy for this, and something that I use a lot in reference talking about startups and early stage startups with small groups of teams all bringing different skill sets to the table, and you've got like, you're just going to make shit happen. You know what I mean? At that early stage and the stuff that you guys really focus on, it's with comms. Startups, it's like
comms. As
how do you build the right group of people that can get an outcome? Or if that's a team sport, it might be a premiership, or they're the champions of whatever they're trying to do. And it's not, you don't really have that ability to be like the deep subject matter expertise. There's a lot more generalists that you have to be deep at, you know, lots of stuff. So it's like, still have your strengths, but how can you play a role in these things? We'd love to get into a little bit more about what you're noticing now around what's working for startups that are still doing stuff and getting out there and getting funding and getting traction.
Well, no one's getting funding, so that's that. That's covered that off. No, I think, look, the people, I think that trying to show a road to profitability is what everyone's trying to do, right? Which is not a bad thing. You know, I mean, I do think it got a little wild there where we were having companies coming to us going, we want to hire 30 people. We got 5 million in funding. And I'm like, who the hell gave you funding? This is the worst idea ever. And you are not a founder. Who knows who you are? But you need to go back and work at Combac. So there was a whole bunch of that, right? It went way too far. And now it's gone back the other way where good companies are struggling because they can't get funding. And then there's all these people coming in offering debt left, right, and center, which is never great for startups either, particularly when they've not got the revenue. So I think the funding's going to come back next year. I really do. But I think the ones that are doing it right is they have a view of one day being profitable. And there is a route. That route might be 5 years. It might be 10 years. Let's hope it's not as long as WeWork was or Uber, but there might be a route there somewhere, as opposed to just growing. And I think that was just out of control. But I think founders generally are getting older, in my view. You know, it's not the teenage university dropout. Anyway, there's a lot more older founders, and they have some responsibilities they need to deal with as well, which kind of makes them more cautious. So it's I think what they need to get better at is balancing caution with gay abandon, if you like. Like, as I said to you before we started, we're building a media company. I've never built a media company. I have no idea what I'm doing. Now, I see that as a strength because who knows what gem I might luck upon through sheer luck. But I also need to go and find people who can help me and get that wisdom of the path trodden. Doesn't mean I have to follow it, but it's good to know what it is. So I think it's this case of right now, they've got this massive oversupply of older candidates, and just because of the generation that we have. I think founders need to tap into those people more from a contract perspective, consulting perspective than they are, rather than just hiring permanent staff and trying to grow and trying to work it all out. There's so much knowledge out there that want to pass it on, and not enough founders are willing to take it on because they think the world has changed, which it has. And it's not about getting someone in to do it their way. It's just hearing their way so you can take it, twist it, and make it your way. But I think you need to hear the ways first.
People still have skills and experience that have value. You don't just disregard them for because they've existed for a while.
I'm about to be 50, which is why I'm talking about this, right? Because I'm going into that age group where, you know, I shouldn't be in startups anymore. I shouldn't be wearing white sneakers. Definitely shouldn't be wearing t-shirts. So I'm coming into the cardigan slipper wearing group. So I'm trying to help us all out here.
I like that. Hey, one of the things I'm sure that you see too from doing the media stuff, and one thing that Locke and I really love with doing the pod is we get to meet so many cool people doing cool things, but across industries. And I think that probably one of the most exciting things for us in the world of startups is just seeing like how much cool stuff's out there across the whole industry spectrum. Is there stuff that like any industries that you're really following along or stuff that you're really digging? Are you on the AI bandwagon and doing all that sort of cool stuff? Like, what are you interested in?
I'm not on the AI wagon. I'm over the AI bandwagon already. I'm interested in the random stuff. I probably meet 25, 30 founders every month, which is nuts, right? So I see some crazy stuff. There's a guy up in Magnetic Island who's used to work at NASA. He was also on Byron Bay's. This is an interesting guy. He's called Stephen. And he's building a robot that is making coral reefs grow 5 times faster than they do normally to recover and making them resistant to temperature increase. That shit's insane. Like, who does that? And he's got a robot. Like, that's mad. I like meeting people like that. I like meeting the guys from Unyoked who put those little huts all over the place where you can go and disconnect. There's a guy in Dubai I met randomly in Melbourne, I don't even know why, who's got this sort of device that they can float out about 100 meters offshore, and it actually uses the sun to desalinate the water just there and there. Like, it's that kind of stuff that you go, what the fuck? And the hydrogen and the energy and these crazy are scientist people, the space tech, I love all of that. I love the stuff that's actually going to genuinely come into our lives probably in some form in 5 years. And you just... To me, the startups are one of two. They're either, oh, I knew that, I wish I'd done it, or there's no frigging way in the world I would have ever thought of that. And it's the latter that I love. I just go, that's just wild.
You mentioned before, like, that business gets 5 mil and you're like, how did you get 5 mil of funding? When people like these ones who are like actual inventors or like real game, like real, like crazy whacked out, like space, anything to do with like space and innovation and like future tech sort of stuff like that. That's, to me, that is like mind boggling because you're like, humans built that.
Yeah. Oh, that's all I think is crazy. Like, I look around and go, everything that we got now, we've all built this. Like, what's next? You know, what's the next wave of whatever? But I mean, like, thinking in the future, is that stuff that gets you excited? Like, looking at things and trends and trying to predict or see what's about to sort of happen?
I don't try and predict. I gave up that a long time ago. But I do. I'm definitely, I suppose you call it, is that a word? Futurist? I think it is. I'm a futurist. I like to see what, I like to look at and get a feel for what's coming. I do like that. Although when it comes to property, I like old properties. So I don't know, maybe I'm a complex person. But from a startup perspective, I definitely like to see where we go. Because like you, I'm just like, it's just crazy. It's so fast. I'm meeting a startup. It doesn't matter when I'm meeting, it's irrelevant. But I'm meeting them at some point in the future from today. And they're doing surgery with, you know, is it Oculus VR stuff? And it's eliminating, I don't even know how they're doing it, but the video on the website looks cool. I've been told about them. I can't wait to meet them. Anything that's new to me is super exciting. And you just get that in startups. You don't get that anywhere else.
You mentioned before your kids and our teenagers. How's life been running your own stuff and juggling family life? My daughter's turns 2 next month, and
used every excuse in the book over the last 2 years.
The last 2 years have been a real reality check for me of like juggling, doing your own thing, running your own thing, and like becoming a parent for the first time. So like, does it get any easier as they get older or what?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, I've been running my own businesses for 18 years now. So before my kids were born. So my eldest is 15, and my daughter and my son's 30. And so what I loved about that was that I had control over my life. So I never missed any of the school shift. I used to come home relatively early, hang out with the kids, and then I'd work later into the night. So I had the ability to never miss anything and be there for the whole thing, but at the same time, only in little snippets. So, because you still got to obviously work your ass off to do all this business. But as teenagers, oh man, it's crazy. They literally just wake up and have zero interest in you. I don't know if you've got a boy or a girl. Boys are very different to girls. I don't know. What have you got?
I've got a daughter, Matilda.
Okay, well, they're a piece of piss compared to boys. Because maybe my daughter, I don't know. She's just been the easiest thing. My son has been very challenging, let's say. You know, my daughter is very academic. She wants to be a surgeon. So that's, you know, that's all good. My son wants to be a professional surfer, or he was just going to plan on living with my daughter.
That's a good backup plan. I like that.
That's a good skill, I reckon.
Surfing, golf, I think like tennis is a good one. Sports are good.
Oh, he did say lifeguard. Lifeguard could work. I mean, we get him on Bondi Life. We live in Tamarama. If we could get him on Bondi Lifeguards, he'd go all right on there, I reckon. He's got the hair for the show.
You can transition into other things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he could be
media.
Yeah, media straight up.
Have my media empire that I'm trying to build.
Yeah, surely get him in. Get him involved. Get him working. That's what Tilly, you just want to get her on the tools pretty early.
Yeah, get her.
When can she make some cold calls? That's what you're saying.
My dad was a Sparky, and I remember going out on the sites and the things with him early. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll get her pumping out emails. From the time she can type, she's sending my emails, you know?
No, we used to. My dad was a dentist, and he had an injury, and he had to stop. So he started teaching dentistry. I spent a lot of my youth folding up direct mail into envelopes. He'd print all the labels off, right, on the old Daisy wheel printers, and we'd take the label, we'd stick them on the lap, we'd fold this thing perfectly, put it in, and you know, hundreds of hours of my life I spent doing that. Hundreds. My children have not done anything to help me, like literally, and I hope they listen to this, like nothing.
Hey, I like just, that.
Just start them a podcast.
We'll clip this bit for you so you can just, they don't have to listen to the whole episode because they don't have interest in you. They're not going to listen to 35, 40 minutes of content, but you can send them 90 seconds.
If we
put it
on TikTok, they might. If we stick it on TikTok, they'll see it for sure.
I like that. Hey, question we ask all our guests is a bit of a mental health one. What do you turn to when you're looking to get some energy back in your life?
It's exercise. Always has been. And it doesn't, and I, again, like I've mentioned, I change around. So right now I'm hitting the weights because I lost, I don't know, I think I lost like 9 or 10 kilos when I was training for that Ironman. But it can be running, it can be swimming, it can be wing foiling, it can be weight training. I tried Muay Thai for a while, wasn't very good at that. In fact, I haven't really found anything I'm good at now I think about it. I tried squash, hot and cold baths at the moment. I'm doing the whole steam cold thing like everybody else in Sydney. It seems to be the thing to do. I love going in the ocean particularly, which is why I live in Tamarama. I think the ocean is probably the number one thing. And then lastly, and I've asked for this for my 50th birthday, bear in mind my age, I grew up in the era of nightclubbing and ecstasy. I love music. I love house music, dance music, trance music. So I've actually asked for a set of decks for a 50th birthday present. My wife just rolled her eyes when I said that's what I wanted. But I love them. The music, it absolutely gives me so much energy.
Oh, I love that. Did you get it? Did you rock the snap pants and all that sort of stuff? Were you into the whole fashion as well?
I had, I did a lot of, and you can see I'm a relatively skinny guy. So I really, for some bizarre reason, got into tank tops and things which look awful on me, just awful. And I had a lot of the smiley face sort of gear that was going around. I didn't call it merch then, but you know, the big yellow smiley face. I had shitloads of that stuff, shitloads.
I love that.
I reckon bring it back.
That's what you live for, though. You look back at all the old photos and go, that was a point in time where people were doing that sort of stuff. That's culture. The things change. It's like, it's like capturing a moment in time, you know what I mean? When it's never going to be like that again.
We actually say we feel
pretty was in London.
People are like turning 50 or like in that sort of age bracket. You guys got to grow up. Tech was around and the internet came through later on, but you got to have fun. You like you were connected and plugged in all the time. And for like
woke up plugged in.
Yeah, woke up plugged in. Now it's like everyone's all connected. You have to fucking know what everyone's doing. And it's hard to just stay away. It's like you get input all the time. I feel like growing up and being able to just like go party for like days, you know, and come back and have to talk to someone on the fucking house phone dialer. Like, that sounds great.
I saw a picture the other day and it said, this is how we used to know where all your mates were. And it showed a picture of a front yard with like 20 bikes just thrown on the lawn. That's how you knew where everybody was, right? You'd just cycle around until you found the big pile of bikes. You're like, everyone's in there. That was it. And going to the pub and waiting for your mates to turn up, and they never bloody turn up, and you can't ring them. So you're just sitting there like a dickhead waiting on your own. Those things, I love those things.
Hey, Locke still sits like a dickhead by himself, don't you?
Yeah. You still don't let me know where you are, right? Turn the light
off. Hey, what about some of the other brands that you dig in? Like, so brands are either you take inspiration from, you like how they operate, whether they're...
You like how they've built something?
Yeah, like what ones do you like?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, I don't know if you guys have seen this. That series just came out on Amazon Prime called The Founder.
Oh, so, yeah, I haven't seen it, but saw that it's come out, yeah.
Yeah, there's four episodes, right? So I watched it. I was reviewing it for Balance the Grind. We were going to do a review on it. And you've got on there Safety Culture, Canva, Finder, and Bright. Now, I knew a lot about the first three. I didn't know a lot about Bright. There were two things I loved about that that really changed my opinions of them. One was the Safety Culture's journey. Luke has never really opened up about him being a single parent, all that kind of stuff. The way he went about that in that episode, watch that episode, it'll blow your mind. But Bright particularly, and that kind of leads into the other things that I'm really sort of passionate about now, is people trying to solve this energy problem, like genuinely trying to solve this energy problem by doing something genuine and not leaving it up to the energy companies. So anyone who's doing anything in that energy space, because it's just a problem that we kind of known about but haven't dealt with for a really long time, as long as I've been alive, I reckon. So anyone who's genuinely trying to do that and is improving the lives of literally the world is very inspiring to me. I like people who do things globally, who genuinely go, right, I don't want to just help Johnny next door. I'll start with him, but I want to help the world. I want to help all the Johnnies and all the next doors. That anyone in that space. And I'm liking all the hydrogen stuff I've been reading about. We started working with a couple of hydrogen brands. I now know more about hydrogen than I ever thought I would. That's super interesting.
Hey, well, we're getting to the pointy end of 2023, which is pretty crazy to say. What are you excited about for the rest of the year, and what can we expect to see?
I'm literally, all I'm excited about is my 50th birthday party. Everything else is a mute point to me now. I really have no interest in it. No, I'm excited about the fact we're going to have a summer where it's hopefully not going to rain. That's going to be the first thing. That's super exciting. But I'm excited about the way the world is changing so quickly. The speed of which it's changing is really, really exciting. And if I can build a media company that can spread word to, you know, I particularly want to hit into Southeast Asia and India and get things to them that they don't have, that generation is calling for. There's almost like an uprising happening there. I think that's going to be interesting. I think those are the two main things, really. Yeah, trying to get into media and working out how to do that. But really, just like what we talked about before, futuristic, right? What's happening? What's coming? It's nuts.
It was pretty crazy.
What's the 50th birthday? Where are you going? La Paqueta?
No, we are having it at our house. We've decided. We are going to go Havana Nights theme. I'm not going to put the address out there because hopefully enough. If there's not enough people coming, I'll let you know and you can pump it out across your channels. I think we're doing okay for numbers. But I haven't had a party for a birthday party for, I don't know, since I was 21 maybe. So it's just exciting. I hope I'm getting Brazilian dancers. There's all sorts of stuff. My wife's gone nuts. She's I think she's more excited than I am. But it's going to be good.
It's funny, like growing up, you have birthdays every year and all of a sudden 18, 21, 30, 40, and then it just goes by the decades. It's like every year should just be. But you got less to look forward to, you know what I mean?
Hey, mate, keep it positive. Keep it positive. Well, mate, thank you so much for jumping on. Hope your 50th birthday is an absolute banger. Get the dance music out, have some ecstasy, live the dream.
Thanks, boys. And hey, there's a tile that's flowing around at the moment, which I think you'll appreciate. And it says, why do men have birthdays? They never grow up. I think that's what you're trying to say, right? That's what you're trying to say.
100%.
100%. Hey, Al Bradford, do you know that what? I really like it when people share episodes around?
I do too. Especially this one, because it's a really good one.
Well, he's doing good things. You haven't seen some of the content coming out of the media group from the Nudge Group Media and Steve himself. He's doing cool stuff.
I want to go to his birthday. How do we sneak an invite? I know he said don't mention the address, but how about just sending it to us?
You can tell us the address.
We can still come.
Yeah, I think so.
I'd love to party with Steve. I'd love to dress up and come to his birthday.
We've got our outfits ready. We haven't got the invites yet.
We don't get invited to many parties anymore, do we?
Where are the invites? Are they coming in the mail?
Is we're too fun?
I don't know.
Are we
maybe.
Too fun?
Hey, see you later.
Oh, another cracking episode from the Funny Business Boys. Caleb Holstein, co-founder of SquareX Innovations here, just wanted to jump on and give you guys a quick update. SquareX is currently open for investment. If you're interested in learning more about what we do at SquareX and want to get involved in the digital future of agricultural supply chains, reach out to me via LinkedIn, or you can reach out to the Dream Big Social Club team and join us securing the digital future of the coffee supply chain and beyond.